Good morning, all. It's another beautiful day. Your attention, please.
Hey there, welcome back to Back in the Village, the Prisoner podcast, where we're covering all 17 episodes of the sci-fi British classic, The Prisoner. This week we're covering Hammer and Anvil. As for notes on the show this week, I will have a link up where you can read the script from Dance of the Dead that we talked about at the beginning. And this weekend is also Port Maricon, the annual prisoner convention held at Port Marion in Wales. So if you're going to that, I hope you enjoy yourselves, and if you happen to drop the name of this podcast to some of your prisoner friends, we'd be much obliged. So, enjoy Hammer and Anvil. Good morning, good morning. Welcome again to Back in the Village, the Prisoner podcast. My name is Clay McCormick from EatDeadMeat.com, and with me, as always, ooh, it gets easier every time.
Every single time.
Is Wes Teasdale of the Penske File. How you doing, Wes?
Good, thank you. I saw the concern in your eyes, the sweat, like, bead dripping down as you nailed it, like an ice skater landing a triple axel or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, 10 points. today, we are covering Hammer into Anvil, but before we get into that, Jonathan, who I mentioned last week, was kind enough to send us a really nice email, was also kind enough to connect me to a website where I could read the actual script from The Dance of the Dead, which is two episodes back we talked about, had been re-edited and cut up quite a bit between its first, between scripting and the final piece.
Yep.
And I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the differences, because we brought it up in that episode, but we didn't really have anything to go on.
Of how far it's come. Didn't seem that big of a change.
No, surprisingly, it's pretty much the same story. There's maybe two or three scenes that we did mention last time. There's a graveyard scene, and there's a tag at the end that you don't get in the show.
Yeah,
that was in the script, and that was the biggest piece of that was the most interesting part for me, because what happens in the script is after number two says you're already dead, and he says I'll never give up, and then she says, well, how uncomfortable for you. He does say death has its advantages, and you see him go back to this party, and I found that to be a really strange, the way that it plays out in the script is a lot more kind of a much more conforming nature than I expected.
Yeah, I thought the like you're saying, it's like they didn't really change the script. It's more they just cut the end of the episode at a part of the script that is not totally the end.
Mm.
I thought the script was more in character of six.
Mm-hmm.
And that the episode was cut to make it look more upsetting or like hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was probably the intention of why they would cut it there instead of him having like a final retort and just sort of going on about his business.
Right. Yeah. The ending felt out of character for me, for him,
yeah.
Because of it ends on kind of an up note, and an up note that involves him basically kind of going and hanging out with all, every, you know, dancing in the party of all these.
Yeah, it undoes people. Everything that had happened for the 5 minutes prior to that event.
Right.
Sort of. So it makes sense why you would get rid of it. It doesn't really add anything. It probably is more impactful for the way that the whole show ended with the court and everything and him found guilty.
Right.
He doesn't just thumb his nose at it and go about back out to walking around the village or anything like that.
Right. And there's another implication, I think, that doesn't come through. It comes through more in the script than it does in the actual show, that room with the telex machine seems like it's where number one hangs out or something, because there's a few times
in the script you're talking about.
There's a few points where number two goes into that room and you don't see what's in that room, but number two goes in there to basically make a report on six.
Yeah.
Which, if that was the way it was intended in the script, they don't really get that across in the actual episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Why, do you think they call him P in the script for Patrick or the prisoner?
I think it's prisoner. I think I've heard that they refer to him as prisoner.
It's weird. They, in the, his dialogue and in the scene descriptions, they call him P.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't just call him Six.
Six, because they call him number two. He's right. Labeled number two.
Right.
I just thought it was a weird. I didn't know if I... it was just strange that it could either be Patrick or just the prisoner, I suppose.
Actually, speaking of number two, that's the other thing I found interesting is in the script, number two is actually a man.
Yeah.
And I believe what happened was whoever was slated to play number two had to back out at the last second, so they got Mary Morris, I believe her name was, and just changed it to a woman. And what I actually really appreciate that is they don't change anything number two does, except for the fact that in the script... Number two is at the party dressed as, Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
As opposed to Peter Pan.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate in making number two a woman, they don't rewrite the script to make it, well, since it's a woman playing it, now we have to make it more of a woman character.
Right, we'll do something else
it's,
with it.
Yeah, it's a great, I don't know if it's a gender equality kind of issue, but it's nice that.
It's respect for the material, at the very least. Yeah,
and it actually reminds me of, they did a similar thing with the movie Alien, because Ripley's character was originally written as a man.
Which makes sense, yeah.
And when they cast Sigourney Weaver, I guess there was nobody saw any reason why you couldn't. And so they cast her, and they did not rewrite the script at all, her part. Which I appreciate.
Even in the male version, at the end, it's like Ripley strips down to panties and bra. You're like, I guess we should cast a woman for this role. That would make more sense.
But then you take out the weird sexual undercurrent of cross-dressing through the entire film.
Yeah. Well, that's always the thing about Alien, right? It's always like that weird how sexually metaphorical everything
is.
Yeah,
there's a whole big psychosexual... Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure it has its own fetish group at this point.
Huh. Jack the Ripper is a weird costume. Did they mention that in dialogue? Because I would not have been able to identify Jack the Ripper just by looking at the costume, where Peter Pan is pretty obvious.
Yeah, I believe they do the same way they do in the actual episode where...
Oh, he mentions it sort of offhand, yeah.
Yeah, I think they have that same... I believe they have that same sort of back and forth. I can't remember exactly what the dialogue is, but...
Yeah, there was a post on Reddit, I guess, like a colorized photo of one of Jack the Ripper's victims or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was very strange. Much more brutal than you think about. You think of Jack the Ripper as sort of like a fairy tale funny thing, but it's like, wow.
Saucy Jack.
he liked to kill prostitutes every once in a while. It's an okay guy, but no, he
seemed
to be
pretty twisted.
He wore
a top hat and gloves. How could he be a bad guy?
I know. Everyone else is poking around with monocles and stuff. And then the other, just as being someone who's taken like screenwriting classes and stuff, there's so much scene description in this script. Absurd amounts of scene description.
Yeah.
And they also script out the entire intro.
Yeah, which I found really fascinating because I actually got confused for a second when I was reading it because at the very top of the script it says something to the effect of standard opening.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm reading the scene description and it's like, this seems oddly like they're just describing the standard opening, which they do. They go through the entire thing. But I assumed that given... it's the same opening for every show. They wouldn't need to do that. But.
Yeah, he must have just copy-pasted. I assume he didn't write it out. Yeah, I would hope, too.
Unless he gets paid by the word, and then, write that shit down.
Get this up on the internet. No, it was an interesting script to read through.
He also told me, Jonathan also informed me, there are four different scripts for Checkmate, which I don't know if I have the energy to compare and contrast them. But
yeah, on that website?
Yes, yeah.
Reading scripts is, you have to be in a mindset to read scripts. It's not really...
Yeah.
It's not easy. Unless you're, like, really invested in it or you, like, don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
And I didn't find... If they're all written like that, it's not an easy form to read.
Mm.
I think modern scripts are much more clean. Like, everything is very, like, one sentence. And, like, you just sort of fill in the blanks with your mind, which makes them easier to read. And that one had a lot of description, and since I've already seen the episode, I'm like, I don't need to read this description.
As long as the dialogue is similar,
the dialogue is the only thing that matters.
But yeah, thanks again to Jonathan for sending that our way, and we'd love to hear more feedback from everybody else. We've been getting a couple pieces that have been really great, and anything you want to send over, we'd be happy to look at.
Every email that's come in, I've looked at and enjoyed on some level. People have always different interpretations and different things that they notice that I never particularly notice.
Right, which is the fun part.
Yep.
You know, especially with a show like this that's so open-ended.
Yes, yeah.
You shouldn't have interfered, Number Six. You'll pay for this.
You will.
But today, we are talking about Hammer into Anvil, which will be our... I keep losing count. Is this episode 9?
This is 9, because we fucked up and 8 was last, I think.
Dance. Yeah.
Wait.
This might be 10.
No, actually. This might be 10, yeah, because we're 10. We're 2 weeks up. Yeah, so right. I think you're right, yeah.
And so, Hammer into Anvil, which is episode 10.
And a great, watching. A great Iron Maiden album, yeah. Name or something.
Whereas the Star Trek Next Generation... titles seem to be unused Billy Joel albums.
Yes.
The Prisoner seems to be unused Iron Maiden.
Yeah, there's
albums.
A definite tone that they're going for when they come to these things.
This episode was written by Roger Wattis and directed by series veteran at this point, Pat Jackson. And the number two in this episode is Patrick Cargill, who you may remember as playing the character of Thorpe in... Many yeah. Happy Returns,
yep.
Which we talked about a little bit in that episode, and we can touch on that a little bit later.
Mm.
But first, we should give a brief summary. I think this is a pretty easy one to kind of do an overall summary of.
Yeah, it
is. Number two, we open with this female character, number 73, who is freaking out, and number two is using pictures, supposed pictures of her husband's infidelity to try and break her, because she obviously knows something. She's some sort of prisoner as well.
Yep.
And she can't take it, and she screams, which number six hears. He runs into the hospital, manages to find out where she is just by hearing her from outside the building.
Yep, yep. Finds her. Yeah, she's... Well, what's two doing to her that's causing her to scream?
I don't know. Village stuff?
Yeah, it's nefarious.
Showing her... pictures of her husband's alien fetish role play.
Well, she wasn't looking at it, and then he's like, he goes to leave, and then he sort of shuts the door and comes back, and then she starts screaming, and that's when it cuts to six.
Yeah,
Johnson.
I think it's just, if it's not something that's implied, maybe she just cracks.
Yeah.
Maybe. And anyway, she cracks and jumps out the window. Oh, she had already tried to kill herself.
Yeah, she's literate.
But this time she jumps out the window and succeeds. Six comes in and sees what's happened and has an exchange with two where I can't remember.
Number
exactly
two
what
sort
he
of
says.
Blames it on six. He's like, "You'll regret doing that," something like that, doesn't he? And then six fires back like, "You'll regret it."
Yeah, and basically number six swears an oath that number two will regret the death of this prisoner.
Yeah.
And the rest of the episode is number six just completely screwing with number two, coming up with all these different wacky schemes to make it look like he is reporting on number two, which is making number two very paranoid. Number six creates a fake bomb threat that number two freaks out over. And basically, at the end of the episode, number six has broken number two. To the point where he forces number two to actually resign.
Yep.
Which is a nice little twist.
Number two thinks that number six is someone sent from the village.
Right.
Like a higher up that is there to test him.
Right.
And then he resigns.
Yeah. Which is a nice twist. And that's pretty much the episode in a nutshell. And I really like this episode. I think I like the concept more than the execution.
Yeah.
But
that's exactly how I feel.
Go ahead. What do you think?
I really love the concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate that his scheme is not deep enough to carry 45 minutes of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would have been really something if number six is all these little shenanigans he's getting up to ended up turning into something big that you're like, oh, wow, he really puts stuff together. when all he's really doing is doing suspicious stuff for no reason, and the number two character is just losing his mind because he can't figure out why this is happening. So that's really my only disappointment, is that once he starts doing his little schemes, it's like a half hour of screen time of stuff that he's just doing something, and number two calls someone in and says, "Why is he doing that?" And they go, "I don't know." He goes, "Are you in with number six?" And then they leave, and then he repeats that, and then that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, I agree. I think the concept is great. I really love the idea of six actually taking the conventions of the village and using them, finally using them to his own advantage somehow.
Yeah,
because the big one of the big linchpins of getting his plan to work is being aware of the fact that two is watching him at all times.
Yep.
So he goes out of his way to do things that are kind of weird that make number two, who is watching him, go, why is he doing that? What do you mean he listened to six records, all the same record, and he was timing? What do you, like, stuff that, you know, an insane person would do.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Or someone who is reporting on number two for the village would do, I guess. I don't know.
Yes, it becomes better once you sort of realize that the number two being suspicious makes sense in the context of his, like, administration, where everyone in the village being suspicious makes you suspicious of what other people are doing, even if nothing is really happening, which is like a Cold War analogy, if I ever thought of one. You know, just because you're... Both sides are unsure. If one side starts doing something, the other side is like, oh, I better go over there and do something there too, just so that they don't get an advantage doing something somewhere where I'm not.
Yeah.
So it's interesting in that regard.
Yeah.
It's and it a lot of it just... we were talking last week about how the number twos are a little bit too similar. Like, it would have been nice to have them have different character traits or something. This one, I think they actually do that. He's the most... openly sadistic out of all the twos.
Right, right.
Which allows this plot to make sense, where I don't think any of the other number twos would have really fallen for this.
Yeah, this number two is definitely... He's the first one who has been like, I don't care about... I'm going to break you.
Right.
I'm going to smash you to pieces. Whereas everybody else has been, well, we can't damage... We must not damage the tissue. You know,
right. That kind of stuff. He's more interested in causing pain than actually getting the job done, which is kind of his undoing.
Yeah.
Because he's not thoughtful enough to really think about what's going on.
He would probably... I bet he and the nurse from Checkmate probably hang out and have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, they're very similar. They're good lunch buddies together.
Yeah.
You think I'm strong?
We'll see. Du must Amboss oder Hammer sign.
You must be Anvil or Hammer.
I see you know your ghetto.
And you see me as the anvil?
Precisely. I am going to hammer you.
Yeah, I like the I like that they set up number two's kind of administration of paranoia subtly by showing the newspaper that has the headline on it. It says
number two initiates new reign of...
Yeah, like, whatever, number two encourages, I can't remember.
Put the drop in. No, but it's something, he encourages some kind of policy or something, which is just funny, the newspaper's
like
reporting
basically
on this.
Number two initiates see something, say something policy, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he wants everybody to be more aware of what's going on.
Yeah, I was, along the same lines as that, I thought this was the most cleanly written introduction the show's ever done. It felt very modern because it's like you get right to the point of knowing what this number two is all about in the first 5 minutes.
Right.
Just from the 73, that's her number?
Yes.
From him sort of causing her to commit suicide to his little meeting with Six in his room where he puts a sword in between his eyes.
Oh, right. Well, I really like that scene.
Yeah. It's, and so you set up the episode really quickly. Which I don't think a lot of the episodes do, not particularly quickly.
I think this is the first one that we've seen where we know what... There's no kind of like beating around the bush in terms of what Six's course of action is going to be.
Right.
So the catalyst to get everything moving is right there at the front, and you just kind of watch the dominoes fall down.
Right. Yep. Yep.
But yeah, I actually, you know, it's funny. I like the beginning. I like that you get a sense of Two's sadistic nature, like you were saying. But I almost kind of feel like this would be better. Maybe this kind of goes speaks to what we were saying earlier about it feels like it doesn't build to something.
Yes.
Or it should build to something bigger. But I kind of feel like this would be a great second part of a two-parter, where the first half is more... Because I guess because Six reacting to the death of this other prisoner, he reacts so viscerally.
Yeah.
Like, he basically swears a Batman oath against number two to destroy him.
Yeah.
That I feel like, and...
Which is a little bit out of character.
Right.
I felt him running in was also out of character.
Yeah.
Sort of like, yeah. They do it just to kick it off, but
yeah.
he has an attachment to this woman that we've never seen before.
Exactly.
That he has been hesitant to do mm-hmm. in the past. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I mean, given his history with women, I mean, he's definitely got some empathy for them.
He does, clearly yeah. He's, yeah, for, you know, for this one. And,
yeah, he's still a quote-unquote good guy, I guess. But yeah, but that kind
maybe
of...
Maybe he's the husband.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good point. I didn't even think of that. New theory. Crack the show wide open. Wes Teasdale.
We have to rewatch from the beginning just to see all the subtle hints that they've been dropping about this.
But yeah, it kind of like that almost feels like the end of the first part. You know what I mean? Like, or let's put it this way. If you watch the first 5 minutes as the previously on the prisoner kind of thing, you see her jumping out of the window and him saying, well, you'll regret this. And then the scene with the sword and stuff. That kind of feels like a condensed version of the first half.
Yes.
And then this episode is Six exacting his revenge.
If that was going to be the case, you would definitely need to strengthen his plot. Because what he does could not carry a whole episode. It barely carries half of this one.
Right.
But that was really my one big failing. His plot is not intricate enough.
Yeah.
It's really just him sort of like... It's like you'd be walking through your house and just like flipping something upside down, and someone else you're living with is like, why does he keep flipping that? And you're just like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Like, I'll do that.
Well, I think where it kind of fails also is they do a good job of showing how sadistic number two is, but I don't think they do a great job of having a pre-existing paranoia. So, because his paranoia seems to be generated by what he's seeing Six do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's paranoid specifically of Six. Whereas, if they had played him a little bit more paranoid in general, it might seem a little bit smoother.
Yeah, no, I mean, I sort of disagree just because he's super paranoid of everyone who doesn't give him the idea, like, when the scientist analyzes the papers that are just blank, and he's like,
"Well, that's after the plot started." I guess my point is that what Six is doing is so minute, like the actual things he's doing are so kind of small and silly, to generate the large reaction that they do.
Yes,
that I feel like maybe if we had a better idea that Two was a paranoid ruler already.
That's true. And that'd be something, if it was a two-parter, you could insert in the first half. Of
they could have done a really nice... did people already know that Stalin was doing this stuff in the 60s where he was killing all the people that worked for him?
I would imagine
kind of stuff?
So, yeah.
They could have done a really nice direct...
analog to history. Have like a Churchill and an FDR to show up in between, have the thing where they're sitting in a row. That'd be... Yeah, it's... I could see that. I mean, if you wanted to do a two-parter, that would strengthen that part. You'd also have to really ramp up his plot.
Yeah.
Which sort of doesn't really work in the setting of the village, you know, because the bigger his plot gets, the more likely it is to fail. So it kind of makes sense that just doing stupid shit is what like gets past everybody.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed how it plays on it's built around him interacting with like the shopkeeper and whatever that woman does, where he told her the Spanish sentence.
Oh right,
she's like a newspaper person or something.
Yeah, she you know ran the want ads or something.
Oh yeah, I wasn't sure what his thing was, and then with the papers and all that stuff, it was good. It was I sort of agree. It's just Two's huge response to the situation feels a little bit out of place.
Yeah.
Just in how short the overall running time of the whole thing is.
Yeah. I guess, I think maybe it would be a little stronger. I mean, I feel like you could even keep the overall silliness of the stuff that he does if there was a little bit more, I don't know, like if 2 was expecting something huge. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like 6 gives him this oath that he's, you know, you'll live to regret this or whatever.
Right.
But then he just kind of does all these silly little things to kind of freak him out. If, I don't know, is that enough? I feel like that's not enough. But do you know what I'm saying though? Like
right.
if 2 was already paranoid or already expecting 6 to do something huge.
Yeah.
You know, like he might blow up the building, he might try and kill, you know, that kind of thing. The fact that he's doing these tiny little things might be that more of like a Chinese water torture kind of thing where it's just little drops on his head that
right, yeah,
finally
yeah.
break him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. It's so I'm sort of just thinking back on it now and it seems to build a little bit better than I would have like originally thought, but it's just because I like the reaction of who's the other guy? 14. Is he like his muscle?
Michael Caine, you mean?
Is that Michael Caine?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
He looks a lot like Michael Caine.
Okay, it's like wow. Him and the
we're going to break you, number 6.
The butler. like when 2 is losing it at the end, and they're just like looking at him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like those little scenes.
Yeah.
And you're gonna have 2 uses for your gratuitous ass kicking thing in here, because there are 2 gratuitous ass kick scenes.
There are 2 gratuitous ass kicks.
First, when he's brought in, he fights off the 3 guys for 3 minutes. They overpower him and take him. And mm-hmm. then when 14 comes into his house and he just fisticuffs with him and throws him through a window.
Which, I don't know. I didn't think that was a particularly good fight scene. I actually thought they did better when 6 was fighting himself in Schizoid Man than they did in this episode.
I felt they put a lot of effort into filming it mm-hmm. in a scene that I didn't understand why it was happening, kind of. Like, because there were a lot of overhead camera shots of them fighting.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you guys are really going out in the coverage of this fight that is ultimately nothing.
Yeah,
and I assume
really
he kills that
no...
guy because he throws him out the window.
Well, I don't think he lives like on the 3rd floor. I mean, he just
throws him out under
he
the
just
kind of
disappears after that. Yeah, that fight didn't really. Well, what I find interesting about that character is he's as far back as I can remember anyway. He is the
talking about 14.
14, yes, yeah. The blonde Michael Caine looking guy.
Yep.
He is the first real henchman, I think, that number 2 has had in a James Bond kind of way.
Well, he's like a lieutenant. He's like a second in command sort of that we haven't seen before. We've seen the doctors, but they're not really out in the field.
Right, yeah. This is the first. He actually reminded me. My first thought was James Bond because there seems to be a tradition of henchmen in James Bond who are big and blonde. I don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, starting in From Russia with Love with Robert Shaw. And mm-hmm. and so it really stood out to me as a very James Bond classic spy concept.
Yeah.
That the big bad guy in charge had his number 2.
Yeah.
Was, you know, the muscle who would who eventually our hero has to fight before he, you know, stares down the final guy.
He gets to the main guy.
Before he picks Blofeld up with a helicopter and drops him down a chimney. Have you ever seen that James Bond movie?
I probably... All the Bond films sort of blend together for me.
Oh, it's so good. It's I think it's For Your Eyes Only. It's one of like the middle to later Roger Moore ones.
Yep.
It's a great movie, but it starts with James Bond picking up Blofeld, who's in a wheelchair, on the bottom of a helicopter and dropping him down a smokestack. Anyway.
It's not, what was the Brosnan one? Like he was, jet skiing or was he water skiing or something? What was in that sort of over
the
top?
Oh, when he like paraglides over a tidal wave?
Yeah.
Not quite that silly.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway.
The waiter said you were whispering.
I wasn't,
but he was.
What about?
Well, he said that...
Yes.
Well, he talked a lot of rubbish. Then he said the waiter was watching us.
Why? Why did number six say that?
No, sir.
Don't you?
No, sir.
You're working with number six.
Me, sir.
And I thought you were the one man I could trust.
But you can. I'm loyal.
Traitor! Traitor! Traitor!
This episode overall is a very physical episode.
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe that is speaks to the fact that maybe the plot couldn't carry it as far as they thought it would.
That's the only reason I can understand.
Yeah.
That 14's character.
Yeah.
He really doesn't need to exist. And he sort of just comes in later on after the first two minions have been dealt with, like the scientists, and then he has another guy that he yells at. And then he comes in, and then he sort of just assumes this mantle of being the second in command.
Right.
And he has the fist fight scene for 3 minutes, and that's right. about it.
Yeah, and it's not unheard of at this point that there's a secondary character like this. Like, this seems like the role that we played more like number 12 in The General, that guy who's kind of flip-floppy in the middle.
Yes.
Who's showing Six the... giving him all the secrets about speed learn, but he's also working with number two, kind of.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
This is the first time where that character has been a physical presence.
Yeah.
Kind of, not quite the Bane number two, like we were talking about.
No.
But actually, in this episode, number two smacks around number six a little bit.
He smacks around everybody.
Yeah.
He's probably smacking around 73, and that's why she was screaming.
That's true.
The only person he doesn't, he threatens to hit the butler.
Oh, the butler ain't gonna take that shit. That scene towards the end where he's very calmly like collecting his things and leaving, putting his bowler on and leaving. That's because number two probably threatened to smack him, and he's like, nah.
He's like, you're out of a job. Another scene that I felt like, wow, they threw this in for padding. He basically puts on his clothes and leaves, and that's the entire scene. I don't know why it needed to be in there.
Well, I think it's just that one is just an accenting that everyone's around
leaving.
Number two is being, you know, like I was saying, the Stalin type thing where he's not trusting anybody anymore.
Yep.
But yeah, I think aside from in Free for All, when the woman who turns out to be number two smacks him around a little bit, and that's not really an aggressive.
No, he's drugged or something, isn't
he? Yeah, she's just kind of like trying to, you know.
Right.
Get him back down to earth or something. This is the first time number two actively assaults number six.
Yeah.
And what I really like about the episode and the concept of the episode is that the hubris that all of the number twos have had to this point is kind of crystallized in this number two, and it finally allows six to turn the tables on everything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a different approach to the way two goes about his business and results in this sort of a turning point in the series, really, for how Six reacts.
Yeah, it definitely is. And the title of the episode, Hammer to Anvil, comes from a Goethe quote that they mention in the episode, which is, you must be hammer or anvil. And the interesting flip side to that is it's actually referenced in a piece called Politics in English Language, written by George Orwell.
Mm-hmm.
Where he says, "It is all in real life. It is always the anvil that breaks the hammer, not the other way around."
Yeah,
which is a nice touch given the Orwellian overtones of this entire series. That's probably not an accident.
Right. Yeah. 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 It's a good quote. It works with how it ends out, and works with the overall theme of whatever is going on here. It's a good metaphor or whatever for what they're actually talking about for these past couple episodes. Or,
right.
You know, the theme of the show in general.
Right. And as you're saying, the turning point for the way Six reacts to everything, I thought Six was, this is the most different I've seen him act in a while.
Yeah.
So you get, the last episode or the last two, I think, were the ones that were shot early.
Checkmate. Aired late, shot
yes. A Checkmate and Free for All, where he's still, sorry, Checkmate and Dance of the Dead, where he's still very much, short and angry.
Yep.
And quote unquote new here.
Yep.
And, we've seen episodes that could be placed later where he's kind of resigned to, like, Chimes of Big Ben, where he's kind of resigned himself to this is kind of how it is now. This is the first episode, or I should say, this episode feels like, somewhere in the middle where he's just like completely just done with everything. You know what I mean? Like he's no longer escaping. But he's not.
He hasn't given up. He's just he's sort of given up on the fact that he's not. He can't just sort of outrun Rover and then sail off into the distance and get away.
Right. There's the scene where he gets smacked around by number two, and number two is, you know, acting very cocky and says, "I'm going to break you." Mm. And he responds very dryly. He says, "Many have tried."
Yeah.
And you're not. It's not going to be you.
Yeah.
And he's just got a disposition that is very different from, I feel like, what we've seen previously.
Yep. Yeah. And no, I'd agree. I mean, I would consider this a, unless there's a better episode for it, this is like a turning point thing, where I could see this being the exact middle episode of the series run, where like things are different from here on. I'd put Chimes after this.
Mm.
I'm still forgetting something.
I'm still putting Chimes like right towards the end.
Yes.
The AV Club, I think, reviewer mentioned how this episode belongs later in the run, because if you look at it from number two standpoints, they're finally getting to a much more desperate and physical attempt to break him.
Yeah, as they're getting frustrated.
They're no longer trying to woo him to their side. It's just like, all right, we got to break this guy and figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think it's more somewhere middle to end.
Yep.
Again, this is going to be interesting if we go back and try and actually...
I know, try to refit all the pieces.
Yeah. Well, maybe if we do it and we do it in a different enough order, we'll get on the Wikipedia page as the...
we'll actually invent one.
The back in the village order.
Because on the Wikipedia thing, it's like the Wikipedia chart where there's like six different versions of like the order you can watch. So yeah, we'll have to have a back in the village order. And like, it's Wikipedia. I can do it myself.
Right, yeah, I know. Do we have to... We can just do that. We don't have to win anything,
we don't need
right?
to support internet. We'll do it on our own.
We will create our own validation.
We'll have to... we should, for like a wrap-up thing, we should come up with our own... Like in secret, we should come up with our own order. And
yeah,
and sort of compare
fun.
And see where they actually end up with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a... It's kind of a tough episode to talk about just because very little that you can talk about happens in it. Like it's really just his scheming is half the episode, more than half the episode. I feel like there was some kind of, I mean, I didn't think that the Thorpe character was supposed to be the same character. That's never said.
They don't mention it. I feel like you can kind of take that or leave it.
I'd imagine Six would have had something to say to him about that.
Yeah, well, like, see, that's interesting because maybe in the first half of my two-parter in my head, they mentioned
they've gone over it. Yeah, they've.
But no, I mean, just you're right. Just the way that they present it in the world of the show.
Yeah,
he doesn't acknowledge it. I read that they shot this one first. And
out of everything?
No, I'm sorry. Between this and Many Happy Returns, they shot this first. They shot Hammer and Anvil first.
Oh, of those, yeah, those two actually.
And I guess McGoohan and Cargill got on so well that he brought him back to play that smaller part. You know, but at the same time, I can't believe that McGoohan is not aware of this stuff. Like the fact
like
that
the
he's
universe
putting,
building?
Yeah, the fact that he's putting number two in another episode as a character back in the real world, who in that episode, looks like he could be working for the village.
Yeah,
that can't be an accident, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Did you ever watch Deadwood?
Oh, I love Deadwood.
Milch does that a lot with characters. Like he likes certain actors, and then he just brings them back.
In Deadwood, that really stood out to me. At least that one character, the guy
who
kills Wild Bill, and they bring him back later.
He works for Hearst. Yeah,
That stood out to me just because I see that actor and he always stands out to me for some reason.
Yep.
I don't know, he's kind of weird looking.
Yeah, he's a big character actor. He's one of those that guy thing when you see him.
Right, and so to see him in the same show. With not just like for instance in Doctor Who, they do that a lot where people who have played small parts in the past had come back for bigger roles.
Yeah,
like there's an episode from the second from the second run. I'm sorry. There's an episode from 4 or 5 years ago.
Yep.
That one of the secondary characters is now the doctor.
Yeah,
one of the actors who plays, you know, is now the doctor.
Yep.
So they do that stuff a lot, and it doesn't stand out as much in that show because
it works better in sci-fi.
Yeah.
Like a sci-fi, you can just be like, you can either come up with a theory or just be like, whatever.
Yeah.
Works.
But in Deadwood, it's
more stand. Yeah.
And he wasn't just like a background guy. He was a guy.
No,
who,
he's
who,
been
who,
instrumental in both seasons.
Yeah. And he had a very specific acting style and, you know, so you're going to notice him. But we'll be covering that on our Deadwood podcast.
Everyone should watch Deadwood anyway.
We should do a Deadwood podcast.
Deadwood is excellent.
That show is so good. I would love that. We just swear the whole time. It'd be great.
One of my favorite, you mistake for fear, Mr. Bullock, what is in fact preoccupation. I love that line. That is, people should watch Deadwood if you've never watched Deadwood.
Yes, I highly recommend it. Anyway. The hell are we talking about? You know what we were probably talking about? We were probably talking about Kosho.
Yes.
Which, I don't know if you're aware of it, is the name of that weird trampoline bouncy thing they were doing.
Oh, fuck. I almost forgot to bring this up.
Yeah, I know, right?
Is that an actual thing?
I don't think so. I think it's made up for the show.
Okay.
There's another martial art that has the name Kosho in it, but I'm pretty sure it does not involve trampolines and water.
And what I'd assume are there must be piranha in the water if you're that unwilling to
fall
into it.
Honestly, I don't think so because it does come back in another episode. And
oh,
I think somebody
really
ends up in the water. And it's just like that was another thing in the episode that didn't make any sense. Like
it comes out of nowhere. And like, it doesn't even end in a decisive victory. It's like some other guys are on. They're like, hey, we reserve the courts. Like, do you mind if we use it? And they're like, oh.
Guys, it's been an hour.
And then he helps them up and they walk off, and then he's just walking through the village and he catches a pigeon. Like, that's how it was so ridiculous that scene
and
existed in that episode.
It was just another piece of this weird, like, rivalry that he has between himself and 14 that doesn't really go anywhere.
No,
or you could have taken maybe they needed to kill 5 minutes or something, but you could have taken that scene out and not changed anything whatsoever.
No.
I mean, you don't even get a shot after that of 14 seeming like
putting his gear away in his locker.
You don't get a shot of him being like extra mad.
Right.
You know, it doesn't build anything. It's just they're doing their stupid thing. And then, which I can only imagine takes place in the Fun Palace.
Yeah. Where else could it be?
But they're playing their stupid thing. And then, the guys come in. It's like, hey, we have this at 5.
And
I'm sorry.
He pulls him up.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, I'll see you later. 14.
I mean, like, if at the end of that scene, the two guys come in and 6 looks at them and then looks at him and then drops him into the water.
Right. Yeah.
That would be kind of fun. But as it stands, it's I don't know. It's kind of silly.
It is weird. I don't know if they just were shooting next to a set that had that. They're like, I want to bounce on that trampoline for
five minutes. I'm going to have to read that script and see how that's described. Because I guarantee you in the script, it's probably described way cooler than it looks.
Well, yeah, it's probably 10 pages of a description going into it.
It's probably one of those early sci-fi things where in the script, it's like, and laser machines come down from the sky. And it's like, well, we have a trampoline and like a 6x6 puddle of water and some helmets.
Yeah, it's a definite budget cut type thing.
Yeah.
That was a funny... I can't believe I forgot to bring that up. That was such a such a standout, weird thing on all levels. Technical, narratively, everything about it was so bizarre.
I liked that... one of the other little bits that I liked in the episode is we see that apparently the bald guy in Control, number 26...
Who's been missing for a while.
Yeah, he... Was it... Shit, what episode? Was it last episode where he gets, like, fired?
No, I don't think I've seen him get fired.
That happened today. They all run together in my brain now.
He just walks out of this one, and they're all sort of standing there. That is this episode, right? Where it's the bald
guy
with the
glasses.
Yeah,
he gets fired. Yeah, because what I was going to say was, I like it because apparently you learn he's also the village DJ who reads requests. over the loudspeaker.
That's right. Yeah, and happy birthday announcements and everything. Yeah.
Hey, giving a shout out to number six.
Hope you
happy
have a good
birthday
one.
And many happy returns. Wink. But yeah, he gets fired and replaced with another guy who seems to not know what he's doing.
So do I never see that guy again?
Oh, no, he comes back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just in that episode, as number two is freaking out,
he
chides 26 for reading that birthday announcement and thinking that he's in on it, so he gets him out of there. And doesn't bring back the voodoo priest guy, though. That's who I'd go to.
Yeah, but very sad. Well, I'd been missing the bald guy. They had a different guy who was in there running things for a little while, but yeah, it's too bad. I guess if anything, you can tell production order probably through little things like that. It's like they have this actor for like 2 weeks, and they're like, we'll get all
that's
this.
True. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Track that bird.
Tracking, sir.
Beam.
Beam on, sir.
Yellow.
Tracking.
Orange.
It's out of sight.
Get me a fix. Radar.
We've got a fix, sir.
Prepare fire. What do you think you're doing?
But sir, that pigeon, number six, is sending a message.
Don't destroy it. Bring it down. I want that message. Be minimum strength. Minimum strength.
Again, it's a tough episode. There's really not a lot of meat to the... And as much as I like it, because I did like the episode.
Yeah.
It's one of the weird ones that I liked it less the second time I watched it, just because I was like, all right, like, here we go. Get through all your sort of stuff. The one thing I wanted to mention is he leaves out the key part of the pigeon trap, which is you have to tie fishing line to the pencil to cause the trap to fall.
Oh,
I don't
know
why the pigeon gets caught.
Well, because it's a dumb bird. That's why.
Throws a sandwich. His continuing infatuation with sandwiches. He's eating it, and then he just throws it in the box, and the pigeon walks in.
I did want to talk about the end of the episode when they have their confrontation at the end.
Oh, just right before that, I want to say that.
Oh yeah.
Incredible artillery that can shoot down but not kill a pigeon.
Oh yeah. What is that? Why don't they use that all the time?
why use Rover?
Yeah.
If you can just incapacitate someone by shooting them.
Like, there was some... It seemed like there was some implication that it might be like a tractor beam or something.
Oh, well, yeah.
Or I
you never see what happens.
Yeah,
you just see the guy walk. I expect
if
the
anything,
pigeon to be dead.
If anything, the most realistic depiction of a laser weapon I've ever seen. Because it doesn't actually shoot anything. You just see nothing and then everything explodes. Man, have you seen that laser weapon that the military is developing? The American military?
This is a real life
thing?
Oh,
yeah. It's on a boat.
Oh, I think I do know about this.
And it's just, there's a car, and then the car just explodes.
it's like a racer.
Yeah, basically. With a lot fewer CGI alligators. But yeah, that's a weapon system that they never touch on again. But you know, I think
it's a little overpowered. It's like the transporter in Star Trek. It's like once you use it too effectively, it's like, ooh boy.
Yeah, and it's also the kind of thing where I feel like where McGoohan is kind of like constantly driving the train forward.
Yeah.
A lot of the other people that are writing and creating this show are trying to jump onto the side as it's going.
Right. Yeah.
So I think there's probably a lot of stuff like that where, oh, maybe we'll use this again. Oh, this is an interesting idea. Let's throw this in there, see how that goes. Like, the different colored badges. Have you noticed that some of them, sometimes they have the white badges and sometimes they have the black badges?
Yep.
I've been looking up, that was actually also, we got an email asking about that as well a couple times. What we thought, what our thoughts on that would be. And I honestly, I haven't found anything anywhere that explains that or...
has a reasonable explanation.
Yeah, I haven't even found anything official or from people involved with the show who have like their own theory about it.
Right.
It just seems to be a production design thing that was never explained.
Yep.
There's been a few different fan theories that it's like a theory about a theory that theoretically maybe they were used to denote who was a prisoner and who was a warder.
Yeah.
But that would kind of defeat the entire purpose of the place.
It seems
really
a little obvious. Yeah. I'd be inclined to just think it's a production thing. It's either not popping against the clothing that someone's wearing, or they made six white dials and now they have these black ones that they can use. And it's like, well, we'll throw these.
We have no more white paper.
We used all the white paper. Number six. I mean, if you know, when when the art department's like making them, and they're like, what number was that? They're like 18. He's like, oh fuck, I made it 16. They're like, well, we only got black ones.
Somebody
left.
Leaned on the keyboard and hit the inverse button by accident.
We gotta fix it.
I mean, you know, so I agree with Wes. I can only assume it's a
real world production thing.
Yeah, like, you know, just to change it up or something. But yep. You know what? If anybody listening has any info on that, feel free to send it my way, and we can talk about it more.
Yeah, I mean, if you come up with a theory that actually makes sense in the universe, I'd be willing to. I'll accept it. I might not believe that it actually happened, but I'll be willing to accept your theory.
I tend to get I tend to tread on that stuff very lightly because that's such a rabbit hole you can go down when it's like, well, my reading of the show is that they're actually all indicating who are aliens and who aren't aliens. Like that kind of stuff. It's like, well, I would like to talk about the show and what we can learn from the show.
We were emailing about something along those lines of just like, if you just start going like crazy and crazier. And I had emailed you something about like, it was just like a analogy thing of like, this is this and this is this. And it was, and I just went down it. And when I got to the end of it, and I had somehow gotten to a bee's honeycomb, which I looked up and I was like, oh, it's hexagonal. That's six.
Yep.
Oh my God. And I actually had a real revelation. I was like, oh my God, I can't.
You're just cracking this show open left and right today,
if
man.
If I was high enough, I probably would have stuck to that idea that I'd come up with that plot. But
and with
unfortunately,
all that,
I was sober at work.
With all that in mind, we should state again that we are in no way officiated with the Illuminati, who is actually behind the show.
No, absolutely not.
Wait, the handshake?
Your human mask is showing. Work on the handshake.
Sorry.
Lizard tongues.
Hide my scales.
No, it's a lot you got to hide. Eventually, eventually you hit a point, and when you're trying to come up with things like that, it's like the truther conspiracy. You hit a point where you're like, this is no longer possible for anyone to sort of feasibly.
Right.
Once your plot depends on like 27 different things hinging on it, it's like, well, I don't think so. It's an amazing coincidence that you've come up with this sort of plot as to what would happen, but that doesn't mean it happened.
And you kind of end up in this area of, when you're coming out the other side of the tunnel, where you've gone so deep that instead of trying to prove things by all these coincidences, your mindset becomes, well, no, you have to prove to me that that's not the way it is.
Yeah, well, it's the famous historical one is like before the, I'm going to fuck up what it is, but the heliocentric view of the universe, like where the Earth revolves around the sun, where before they thought the sun revolved around the Earth, and like the mathematicians that they were going through to keep, because they started hitting a point where they realized that this couldn't be true mathematically, but they accepted it as the answer, so they had to work their math more difficultly to come up with the answer that they were looking for to explain why it wasn't working this way. And so once they just came up with the revelation that, you know, the Earth goes around the sun, it's like, oh, it's actually a very simple answer to all these questions that we're making very complicated.
Yeah. Most of the answers to the prisoner questions are probably they were moving really fast in production.
Yes, yeah.
But no, I mean, I do enjoy that stuff with shows like that. Like, I love David Lynch movies.
I think it works better with movies than TV shows is the problem.
Like, I love the movie Mulholland Drive.
Yep.
Arguably, that movie doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
But you could just dive into that movie and just
make it what you want it to be.
Yeah, I mean, there is a core understanding of what is happening.
Yep.
But it's so out there and it's so open ended that you can read into it whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that. And I think this show does that well. Because of the things we've talked about, like these little touches that seem like, oh, maybe they're just oversights, but they kind of don't seem like oversights because casting this guy as this role in two different things, that's a conscious decision you have to make.
Right. And it's not like they've made 150 episodes.
Right.
Like,
that's the other thing. There
cast.
Are so few episodes that it really lends itself to that. Like if you were to, I mean, if you're, when you get to something like Lost, which I've never actually watched, but I've heard that basically, the thing with that show is they gave you a lot of questions and very few answers,
yep,
to the point where it stopped being fun and just became annoying.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's a line that's very difficult to walk when you're writing this stuff.
Yeah. 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 You got to keep it short. Short, right, and sweet.
Who are you working for, number two?
For us! For us!
That is not the way it's going to sound to X-04.
I swear to you!
You could be working for the enemy, or you could be a blunderer who's lost his head. Either way, you failed. And they do not like failure here.
You destroyed me.
No. You've destroyed yourself. A character flaw.
I wanted to talk about the last scene with 6 and 2 a little bit. Just because I really liked 6's psychological gameplay at the end. Because at this point, 2 believes that 6 is someone sent to spy on him. 6 has written these cryptic messages from X-04.
Yeah.
Saying, I got your message in the record album. Actually, I wrote it down, I think. Referencing your query via Bizet record, number 2's instability confirmed. detailed report follows.
Sure.
And so 2 thinks that 6 is there reporting on him, which actually kind of makes sense a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the AV Club reviewer pointed this out, and he said it kind of makes sense and is easy to believe, given that to this point they've treated number 6 with such kid gloves that he almost seems like he's there doing quality control or something.
Right,
you know?
Like he can't be removed.
Because, yeah.
Like he's sort of the untouchable.
Yeah, he's the reviewer in the restaurant, right, that they have to put their best foot forward for or something.
Yeah, yeah. And I just wanted to get off of that, but it's like number 6 obviously does have sort of a plot with, like, I got the thing from the record. And
yeah.
It's like, I've talked to this stuff. It just doesn't, feel that intense when it gets to that point. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like you've ever felt like you've been building. He obviously was sort of doing stuff with a plan, but it feels very random. And at the end, it kind of just like, all right, whatever.
You know where I think it is a misstep? I think when he's doing the Morse code thing on the beach.
Yeah.
Because that is, like, exceptionally silly.
Yeah.
Because he's out on the beach, right into camera, doing Morse code with the sun reflecting off a mirror.
Yep.
And 2 freaks out, and he's like, what is the Morse code saying? And they say it's patty cake, baker's man, bake me a cake as fast as you can.
Yeah.
And number 2 is convinced that's code for something, even though people are like, who the hell would he be talking to?
There's no boats.
No planes. There's no submarines. And that seems like a step backwards as far as escalating his plan.
Yeah.
Cause I like the record thing. That's fun. I also love the use that the record that he uses, the title of which is, I can't say this word, it's a French word, so I'm going to leave it at that.
Croissant.
La Laissan, I guess.
Okay.
Anyway, clearly I can't.
Is it French. It's a real album?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I love the use of the music throughout the show.
Yeah.
Because they keep coming back to the opening bits of that piece. And it's like, it's a great, for a show that uses pretty much the same soundtrack in every episode.
Yep.
Incidental music is similar, if not the same. They import this bit of bombastic classical piece as an accent for, this plan to crush 2 that 6 is rolling out. And I really enjoyed it as a break from some of the other stuff. And they work it into the regular stuff, too. But it's a nice little accent.
Patty cake. This is what you put in.
And that's what came out, sir.
And it is a new code. And the computer's not programmed for it!
The music I noticed was there's a song that sounds distinctly like the Pink Panther. song in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, ba-dum, bump, bump.
Yeah.
Bump, 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 bump.
Yep.
It's like, wow, I didn't realize if that was the Pink Panther that they had taken like an alternate version of it or something, but it was funny.
No, that piece shows up in some later other episodes. Okay. Yeah, it's the usually the number six snooping around music.
Yes, yeah, it's a snooping. Yeah.
But yeah, actually, the use of this piece, this French piece, kind of reminded me of the way that they will very subtly work in like the James Bond theme.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it'll be the regular soundtrack, and then I'll be like. Dun, 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 you know, worked into it.
Yep, yep.
Which is cool because it adds a lot of atmosphere to the piece.
Absolutely.
And if I were to pick a theme piece for number six, I would definitely use that because it's big and angry and
right.
and cool.
Thunderclaps.
Yeah.
I need to find a YouTube video of like a orchestra playing the prisoner. Is that written awesome. For the show?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
That would be awesome. I would love to see that.
Or just like, yes, the band.
Yeah. That would be amazing. A nice prog rock recording.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It'd have to be someone somewhat arena focused, not like Dream Theater or anything, yeah. but like someone who's got one foot in like the 70s rock scene.
But yeah, that scene at the end with Six and Two, I like the logic that Six uses because... As I was saying, Two thinks he is is there to report on Six.
Yep.
And Six says something to the effect of, well, I'm not. Or I don't know if he straight up says he's not. But he says, well, if I am, you're still blowing your job by trying to interfere with what I'm doing.
Yep.
And at that point, that's what kind of snaps Two because he's now breaking... What he now believes he's breaking the protocol of the village.
Right, he's lost either way.
Right.
When he resigns, he sort of has the tone of like, well, I have to do this because I can't really win out of this situation.
Right, which is a great, great piece of twisted logic on Six's part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for an episode that is, like you said, my favorite part of this show in general is when... There's a clash or a twist of logic and stuff. I find that stuff really interesting.
Yep.
And to have that nice piece at the end, you know, kind of like in Checkmate, how at the end they talk about how they thought he was the number two,
right.
you know, worked for number two, that kind of thing.
Yep.
I really enjoy that stuff. So it was a nice piece at the end.
Yeah, wraps it up, certainly, as opposed to Dance of the Dead, which just kind of ends, which would be a nice little callback to our earlier thing here.
Right, right.
It's the exact opposite.
Morning. Did you sleep well?
I had another terrible night. Insomnia. Couldn't sleep. So restless.
So, this is an interesting episode because we can't rate number two's plan because there is no plan in this episode for number two.
I was thinking I would just rate his general performance, which is terrible. So the actor is good, but this number two is by far the weakest of the twos that we've seen, or at least the most. He's put in the wrong position.
Yeah, it's tough because like last week on Checkmate, I thought that number two was the least involved.
Yep.
But he still had some interesting things to do where he was kind of like a hip karate dude or something.
Yeah.
This episode, he's pretty over the top. He's not bad.
He's not the guy you'd want running this kind of operation.
Yeah.
He'd be great as the scientist, number two, like the second scientist or something. But
right.
Yeah, so I have to give him a 1 out of 5 just for his just complete... He was promoted too high as the Peter principal or whatever.
I would agree with that. Well, maybe we should flip it and we should rate Six's plan because it's in this episode, Six is trying to break number two.
That'd be Six's plan.
I guess technically it's a six.
Yeah, because it works.
Yeah, because he works.
Well, he doesn't free himself from the village. I don't know if that's our criteria.
Yeah, I guess it depends.
Because it would be breaking Six would work. So I think Six would have to get out of the village. So I think have to give him a 5.
Yeah, okay.
At the best. But I'd sort of... I guess I'd give it a 4 or something.
Yeah.
Just because it feels sort of... And it sort of feels like he just stumbles into it at the end where number two is like listing off that exo whatever. thing, and he just
XO4.
Kind of he just kind of flies with it. He's like, yeah, that's exactly where I'm coming from. So he sort of lucked out in that situation.
Yeah, I would say probably around the same. It's not you know, like we were saying, it could have been more destructive. It could have built to something bigger.
Yes, I was waiting for the big payoff where I'd be like, wow, he intricately put together some stuff, and yeah, it doesn't really happen.
It could have been more the Joker getting caught on purpose,
yep,
than blowing up all the water in Gotham City.
Yep, yep.
If we continue with our Batman metaphors.
You've lost, you and your friends! I'll break the lot of you! You too. You're in this plot, aren't you? Oh, yes! Get out! Get out of this house!
So yeah, last thing is a little bit of trivia.
Sure.
This is actually the only episode that features a number with the number 7 in it, which is the girl at the beginning, number 73. It's the only time we get a number with a 7 in it. I don't know why that is.
Just weird odds.
Well, if you look at 7 and what it means to the world of the tarot.
Oh, yeah. Well, as lizard people, we don't talk about that. But yeah, that's funny. And it's also, it's a, I think it's a comedy thing. 7 in a joke is seen as a good number to end a number on.
Okay.
So if you're exaggerating a joke, if you say 37 times my mother-in-law, blah, 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 yeah, whatever, 7 is always seen as a good number to end on for
that's
some
interesting
reason.
Yeah. I think I've heard that before, but yeah, I can't remember why that is.
I don't, it just probably just sounds good or something. Yeah. The sound of it is kind of jarring and funny.
So some other little bits of trivia. The music that they actually use, La La San, I guess,
yep,
by Georges Bizet. It says that the music is appropriate since the story of La La San concerns a woman who drives a man insane. Because the title character is never shown in the play, La San is now used in French to describe a person who is prominently and sometimes voluntarily absent from a place or situation where they would be expected to show up.
Hmm.
That last piece doesn't really apply so much.
No, the first part.
Driving the insane is interesting.
Yep.
We see Port Marion postcards for sale the village, which
nice.
I mean, is a nice touch, but presumably you would just send them to other people in the village
yeah,
and like maybe like circle something and point like, that's me.
Yeah, the mail service probably isn't as robust as it would be other places in the world.
In modern German, the proverb "better to be the hammer than the anvil" is fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
I already mentioned the Orwell thing. Oh, the martial art of Kosho was devised for this and another episode. There is, in fact, a real martial art called Kosho Shirai Ryu Kenpo. So, I mean, I don't know.
Which does not involve trampolines.
Maybe it does, but I doubt it. It's weird because it involves the pool, but not the trampolines.
Yeah, it's a unfortunate mix. There's no gun kata in any of these episodes,
the
right?
Oh, I love the gun kata. It's so stupid, but I love it. We should talk about that movie after we're done with this. and just amongst the other records that can be seen in the shop are Four Saints in Three Acts, which is an opera written by American composer Virgil Thompson, written in the 1920s for an all-black cast, which was groundbreaking at the time.
Hmm.
Beyond the Sea by Frank Chaxfield, an English big band and easy listening conductor, and a record by Annie Fischer, who was a Hungarian Jewish classical pianist who fled to Sweden to escape the Nazis. You know, not a lot of bearing on the episode, but interesting stuff.
Yeah, just little stuff in the background.
But yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, this is a fun one to talk about, even though, like we said, there's not a ton of meat there.
No.
Love the concept. Would like to see it have been done a little bit bigger.
Yes.
More intense. Any final thoughts?
No, good concept. Yeah, just the sort of the second act or second half just really not being deep enough to really make you want to rewatch it or anything, like immediately, or you don't gain anything from the rewatch.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, but I did enjoy it the first time.
Yeah.
Which is, so it's good. It's good as an episode of television.
Yes.
I guess,
yeah. Would you have anything you'd like to plug?
Sure. We've got a Star Trek podcast. You can go to thepenskypodcast.com, or you can go to iTunes, search for Penske, Star Trek, anything like that. It'll pop up. It's called Let's Watch Star Trek. You can also go to YouTube and all that stuff. Search Penske File. It's all there. Thank you.
Excellent. And by this point, we are on iTunes.
Yep,
so yep. If you'd like to swing by there and leave a rating or a review, we'd be much obliged. And again, I am by no means an authority on any of this stuff. So if you'd like to get in contact with me and send me some trivia or any questions or just generally tell us how great we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can email us at theprisonerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at @prisonerpodcast. And I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, sounds good to me. But yeah, the emails have been fun. It's good to hear other people's thoughts, and it gives us something to talk about. Yeah. Otherwise, we're just sitting here staring at each other and being like,
talking about how great Deadwood is.
All right. Next up, episode 1 of Deadwood, pilot.
Well, we'll see you next time, episode 11, with It's Your Funeral, I believe, is the next episode.
Good one.
So we will see you then. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the first episode of the Deadwood podcast. Huh? Oh, right. Hammer and Anvil. That's what it was. I hope you enjoyed Hammer and Anvil. If you did, we'd love a rating or review on iTunes. And we will see you next time with It's Your Funeral. Thanks, guys. Bye.